Talk given Sunday, 23rd July 1978.
At our weekend in June, we considered the meaning of the word religion. And if we are seriously concerned with religion, and that seriousness expresses itself particularly in the depth and intensity with which we care for religious living, then perhaps one of the most important implications of that is our total commitment to the religious life. A total commitment. Not something which is just superficial. Matter for Sundays and Monday to Saturday, we keep company with the devil when we feel like it. This total commitment means, never forget, living as a true human being. Well aware of the fact that we as we are not full humans yet. Mankind is evolving, growing towards full, true humanity. To live the truly human life means to live the everyday life in what we, in our day and age, call the religious way and the religious sense. Because do bear in mind that the word religion is not sufficiently fully understood except by a very few people. The vast majority think of religion as something different from the world, the life of the world, the religious life and the secular life they talk of. This is a profound error. The truly human life, which means living in the world with all its activities, is the religious life also. If religion does not completely permeate the secular life, man will be everlastingly in sorrow. There is no solution whatsoever to the problems which we encounter in our worldly life, apart from living the religious life, the fully human life. What is the reason for that? The religious life releases a dimension of being and consciousness which is far profounder than the state of mind in which we find ourselves and our mode of awareness in the world in the ordinary sense. Here and now we are fragmented. We are confused. We are in inward conflict continuously. The psyche is never at peace. It is always struggling against something, or is confronted by that which puts it into a state of fear and disorder and so forth. But if one lives religiously, one releases from within one's own inner being that which lies dormant within it. And that which lies dormant within it is precisely that which establishes us in our full status as human beings. Remember that the word human literally means the happy creator. Creator in the sense in which theistic-minded people talk of God as creator. We don't know what creation is. We only know procreation, which means producing something, not merely biologically, but culturally too, which is true to type. It has a past. It is similar to that which has come to this state. Creation is something totally different from that. It has no bondage in terms of space, time, substance, or any of the so-called laws that we know of. Causality and all the rest of it disappears where creation is concerned. Only the few, through the history of mankind, have ever realized that state. And in saying that, I do not mean that they have achieved anything special as creators, but what they have done is so to live and so to grow that they have ceased to be obstructors of the primordial, absolute creative energy which is unknown to us and unknowable to us as we are. They have ceased to be obstructors to that creative energy in action in eternity. That is to say, in that dimension of being and consciousness, which is infinite, immeasurable, unimaginable, inconceivable, and immortal. Everything that we produce dies. All our works of arts, philosophy, science, everything changes, and it undergoes a death, as we call it. Partly truly, partly not so truly, because death actually is a transformation. But when death doesn't lead to that transformation through consummation and perfection here and now, then it is death in our ordinary sense, decay and disruption. And it is this which we are afraid of and from which we run away. Now, the religious life belongs to that sphere of immortality, the quality of immortality. The sense of the infinite, of transcendence itself, evokes a responsive thrill in our inner being, which the brain can never know of. Everything which the brain raises up, every mental construct, or series of constructs, or systems of philosophy, are but somewhat misleading shadows of that reality, which is transcendent. It is there all the time. It functions all the time. And all this which is mortal and finite is subsumed completely in it. But this is the nature of the growth, the development, and the fulfillment of consciousness itself. And this consciousness is something which remains in the realm of the undefined and the undefinable. That is why it is transcendent, non-finite. There are no criteria, there are no standards by which to measure this thing. Now, total commitment, therefore, to the religious life has a meaning which baffles the search by the intellect of practically all people. The meaning of total commitment is such a complete letting go of oneself, not holding on to self. Such a complete letting go of self that spontaneously, naturally, and above all, unknowingly, we put ourselves more and more in harmony with that transcendent dimension of being and consciousness. And then the totality, the infinite, the whole universe finds in us an unobstructing medium for expression through us as man, as perfect men. And that perfection cannot be defined, because every definition we may try to make of it is of necessity limited. You can't define the indefinable, just as you can't empty the Atlantic into your teacup. It's like that. Now, don't try to grasp all this with the brain. It's hopeless. It's a hopeless task. One cannot. One can speak about it. One can sense it as and when somehow or other one has been touched by the lightning of transcendence itself. And you know that in the ordinary way, a touch by lightning kills. But in this case, it does not kill. On the contrary, it produces a transmutation of the person in such a manner that he is the perfect receptacle, the holy grail through which life in its real divinity, its real splendor and marvel flows through quite freely. Now, there are certain aspects of this total commitment which we should bear in mind, up to a point, bear in mind. By that I mean, not make them fixations in terms of a set of principles or thoughts. Principles, ideals, etc., there are bound to be. They will emerge. But don't cling to them, because if we cling to them and don't let them go when their lifespan is over, then we are clinging to dead fossils. And if we cling to dead fossils, the psyche has no chance of growing after that. One is a vegetable. That's all. See, growth means change. And it means change in line with the trends of life for us as human beings. You can have change which is fortuitous, which is a waste of life energy, which is change in the wrong direction, harmful to us, harmful to our environment. Or there can be change in the right direction. Now, to discover what is that right direction is precisely our task in life. That is our personal responsibility. If we understand this carefully, we will cease to resist ourselves or to resist what we consider and feel is the evil and the harmful in our environment. Then you'll say, well, what do we do then? How do we bring about this change from the ill state to the well state, the whole healthy state, the holy state? We cannot bring about the change. We can just observe what is the trouble with the psyche. Observe it. And then the change takes place by itself without our knowing how it does. You know why? It is one of the extraordinary characteristics of life that it has the power of self-healing. You all know that a living cell, for example, every living cell in the living body, in the plant, anywhere, displays this self-healing power. If this self-healing power within our own psyche is allowed to function, it will function freely. And we allow it to function by seeing clearly for ourselves just how the psyche is functioning. There is no external medicine to apply. There are no external regulations to follow, commandments. There are advices, there are visions of what reality means, which each one of us has individually. And it is that vision, in the light of that vision, that we cease to struggle against ourselves and remain in a state of conflict. And thereby, the healing takes place. We discover then that the obstructions to that self-healing process are our own desires, our own fears, our own ambitions, our greeds, and our propensity to react violently against what we do not like or what we disapprove of, and so forth. Those are amongst the principal obstructors. When we see such things functioning within us, really clearly see it, then we don't have to struggle against it. The disease just dissolves away. That which is ill in the psyche is not torn out of the psyche, but transformed into psychical energy which now finds healthy and right expression. Then when we refrain from evil, the refraining takes place just quite naturally and spontaneously. There is no ill health, no neurosis, no psychosis attached to that sort of thing. And this is something which the human race has to realize for itself. To heal ourselves, to let ourselves be healed, we can't run to another person. We have to let it happen within ourselves. Does anybody else digest your food for you? No. Does the life energy in another person's living body keep your body alive? Not at all. It's your own life energy. You are you, in a very real sense, within the particular sphere of your psychophysical organism being alive. It is there. Our interaction with all other people, our environment, produces innumerable stimuli, each and every one of which can be utilized by us in order to learn, to understand how to live so that harmony can prevail within ourselves and in our relationships with everyone and everything around us. This is a very important point. What is the root of our conflict? The self-awareness, which is isolative, which divides our whole world into two essential parts. Myself, which is the most important, of course, and most predominant in my consciousness, and all the rest of the universe. That's the other thing. You know, if we had even the rudiments of an artistic sense in us, we would see that things are not quite in proportion as they ought to be. You see? And if myself is in the foreground and the rest of the universe, which is infinitely larger and more powerful than myself, is in the background, it would be a little bit difficult to see what is the foreground. See? Now, this is the sort of sense of proportion we must get. And the simplest way to get that sense of proportion is to be so completely attentive that you're unaware of separate self. I, the observing subject, am separate from the observed object. So long as I split the universe into two parts like that, I am everlastingly in conflict with the universe. And as far as mankind is concerned, there are 4,000 millions of us who are as conceited as I am. You see, this is one of the great problems. Once one really sees that, then it is easy to let go of selfness, separate selfness. And if one lets go of separate selfness, one has let go of the fundamental root of being and remaining conscious of our whole life in terms of the finite, the measurable, the restricted, the conflicting, that which is ill. We let that go, and we experience freedom, perhaps for the very first time in our lives, in its true sense, the real freedom, which has no relationship whatsoever to those terrible things which bedevil our lives. I like, I wish, I want, this is my ambition, I am going to achieve this. In fact, I'm going to change the world in such a wonderful way that it will be all right by tomorrow morning. Dear old Puck, Lord, what fools these mortals be. You see? So, to see how the psyche functions enables the right diagnosis to take place. It is the only medicine, and it enables the self-healing process to come to fruition. We have to see this, understand it with our whole being, which means without the intrusion of the limitations that the brain, with its set of concepts and beliefs and conceptions, imposes upon us. This is very difficult. It's not easy. And as you all know, or at least most of you know, I have this remarkable gift of making things more difficult for everybody rather than less difficult for anybody. Because after all, what are we concerned with? Creation. the creative process. The human being is the happy creator. The one in whom and through whom universal mind, which is that archetypal creative energy which releases the entire cosmos into being, universal mind can function freely without being obstructed. The obstructor is the state of my psyche. That is in the ill state. Now, let go of the obstructiveness for which I myself am responsible all the time. And wonderful things happen. You will discover you don't have to build character. You don't have to acquire virtues. In fact, you can't. You will never acquire any virtue. Virtue doesn't belong to you or to me. Virtue and vice are two illusory actors in the life of our psyche. They are non-existent ghosts which we set up by our dualistic and more than dualistic multiplicistic standards. You see? It is we who do that. When you let go of that, suddenly you discover there is but the wholeness, the unity. And you discover the extraordinary thing that this unity is not a uniformity. Otherwise, manifested existence would be unutterably dull. We wouldn't have the uniqueness even of a nut or a bolt in a machine. You see? So, the uniqueness of our, the possibility of uniqueness within us comes to full fruition if we let the universal process move freely through us unobstructed. Because that is, has as its dynamic power behind it creation, this creative activity in eternity. Even thinking, ordinary thinking, of the sort you and I are capable of, can take us quite a way, quite a long way, towards understanding the significance and meaning of creation, of what it is to be a human being, of what it means to be totally committed to the fulfillment of the purpose of our existence, which is that through the individual person, human person, consciousness itself and mind will realize eternity, immortality. That which is manifested is never immortal or infinite. It is finite. But the miracle takes place when one lets go of finite selfness within oneself, and the infinite plays its part through the finite, so that this separation and apparent opposition between finite and infinite disappears. See, there lie the springs of well-being, of true health, of fulfillment and fruition. But do realize all the time, it is not my well-being, my good health, my fulfillment. The moment that restrictive my comes in, the transcendent lets go. If I have said it once, I have said it 100 times. Transcendence or God or Brahman, or use any word you like, is non-compulsive. The totality is non-compulsive. It has no need to compel. See, do you see why? The totality is the totality. Transcendence is transcendence. Supposing you are God, transcendence, the totality, in that sense, not a gentleman or lady or whoever it is upstairs or somewhere else, all those childish concepts. But if you were really God, you would not care a button for any individual manifestation which is not going the right way. Because you are absolute creator. You are constantly pouring out something new. This is no use. Oh, put it in the waste paper basket. And that's precisely what happens. Have no illusions about this marvelous, gentle, merciful, kind, all the pleasant qualities, you see, of a supreme creative power which looks after you, takes care of you, in fact never was introduced to you and never doesn't want to be introduced to you because of its absoluteness. This is a terrible thing to say. I know these are terrible things to say. But if we face the terrible, if we really look right into it, not as something external to us, but also as something right within us, then you will find your true strength. Not till then. Until then, you will always be subject to defeat in life. Look at the people who are supposed to have achieved this, that, and the other in life. What is their state when they come to the end of their lives? Dust and ashes, a sour taste in the mouth. The sweet savor of life is not there. And they thought that they were doing wonderful things, perfect things, growing to fulfillment in any sphere. Be conventional religious, or the philosophical, or the artistic, or the political, or economic, or any sphere you like. Just egoism, vanity, and complete blindness, lack of vision, and at the end there is disappointment and a perishing. Isn't that true? Right. So now, this total commitment necessitates that we should be able to see for ourselves. No one can show them to you. We should see for ourselves the trends of life. The trends of life within us, bearing in mind certain simple fundamental things, that we are integral part and parcel of a total reality, one total reality, a whole universe. And this whole universe is so wonderful that there is a multitudinous variety of forms in which the primordial creative energy functioning in eternity manifests itself in finite terms. There is nothing, there is nobody in the world just like you at any moment of your whole life. Each one of us is continuously changing. But at each and every single split second of our existence, We are just ourselves, something wonderful, something unique. Whether the uniqueness includes, which is usually the case, or does not include, which is very rarely the case, what is actually ill. If it is ill, it means that it is not in tune with the trends of life for the human race, for human beings. What is in tune with the trends of life for a tiger or a mosquito or a plant or anything like that will have its own natural differences from the trends of life for you and me who belong to the human species. Now you see, only the human being can see that. And you can't be told that, excepting in very vague general terms, which often are all too misleading. Why can't we be told that? Consider carefully. Supposing you have woken up, the vision is yours, you have really understood, your life has been transformed. Now, I come along, I'm in a confused and sad state, and I want help. Now, you may think, right, he seems a sincere person, I'll tell him. Now, your words are, after all, just a set of symbols. And they just convey an infinitesimal fraction of what you yourself know in fullness in your own living inner consciousness. Now, I, being in the confused state, in the ignorant state, in the state which distorts things, what am I going to make of your words? Only that which I myself have already realized and am capable of appreciating. What I cannot appreciate, what I cannot see, if it is contrary to my own beliefs or desires or fixations of any sort, I reject and say, oh, he was a fine person, but you know, I don't agree with what he said here, there and everywhere. And in any case, if I try to follow all that, how on earth am I going to earn my living? We never earn our living. Nobody in the universe can earn his living. The man who earns 100,000 pennies or pounds or dollars a year or whatever it is, he too is subject to death the very next moment. Where is his living? We live by the grace of the totality. The totality keeps us alive. We can act in harmony with it or interfere with it. We can be unwise enough to commit suicide or deliberately to do things which lead to our death and so forth. Then that's the end of that person trying to be the grail of transcendence. So you see, we have to see the trends of life for ourselves. They can't be told by another. They'll be similar to the trends of life for all members of the human race. But the particular form for you depends upon you, your circumstance, your environment. Now, it is not at all easy to be totally committed to your own vision. Not at all easy. Look carefully into the psychical processes that go on within yourself. You will see certain things. You will say, ah, I know that that is the right thing. But watch the ways in which one's own ambitions and greeds and passions and so forth try to evade one's responsibility to live wholly by that vision. That is our particular task. And these are some of the things which are involved in this total and complete commitment to the religious life. But let there be this commitment in the best way possible to us as we are, and without looking for results, without knowing them at all in any way, the right thing will happen. And therein, there is real fulfillment.